I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. The best-selling and award-winning author Fred Stenson joins me now. He was in town last week for an appearance with the Vancouver Writers Festival to discuss his recent novel, Who by Fire. It's a novel that's gotten good notices for its depiction of a family in southern Alberta who in the 1960s find their lives affected by a sour gas processing plant nearby. The Ryder family farms, and Tom and Ella and their three children live downwind of the project and find themselves find the escaping gas making them sick and killing their animals. The book moves to the present day, it actually alternates, where we see Tom and Ella's only son, Bill, now working in the oil industry. We see him near the end of his career looking at life. I'll get Mr. Stenson to tell us about this book and the themes he writes of, such as the oil industry, life in Alberta, family relationships, marriage, loyalty, and community. Fred Stenson's book, The Trade, was nominated for the Giller Prize in 2000 and won numerous other awards. He's also written works of fiction and nonfiction. Amongst his other critically acclaimed and prize-winning works include The Great Carew and Lightning. His website is at fredstenson.ca. Who by Fire is published by Doubleday. Please welcome to the Plant on the Line program, Fred Stenson. Mr. Stenson, good morning.
Good morning, Joe.
Thanks for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure.
So what is sour gas, if we didn't look it up before the interview?
It's natural gas that exists in the underground reservoir mixed with hydrogen sulfide.
Mm-hmm.
And that's referred to as sour gas. So conversely, sweet gas is natural gas that doesn't have that arrives at the surface without that contamination. The hydrogen sulfide is very seriously poisonous gas. What it does is, if you take literally one good deep breath of it, and it will paralyze your lung.
Mm.
And so unless you can get out of that atmosphere very quickly, you'll go unconscious, and that's that. So,
and then sometimes we smell sometimes if you're on a highway or even on a street somewhere, you'll smell that rotten egg smell.
Yeah, that's
is that
right.
Sulfur?
Yeah, that is the hydrogen sulfide.
Mm.
Yeah, I mean, there's also kind of the sulfur smell when you strike a match, but the more eggy smell is hydrogen sulfide, and they always say that it's the good news if you can smell it. It's an awful smell, but because
mm-hmm.
The other thing that hydrogen sulfide, or H2S as it's referred to, will do is it knocks out your sense of smell.
Mm-hmm.
At a certain concentration, the lethal concentration. So if you can smell it, you're kind of in a safer zone than if you can't.
Now, you live in Cochrane, Alberta. That's just outside of Calgary, is that right?
Yeah, that's where I've been living for about the last 10 years. And prior to that, Calgary, and I grew up in southern Alberta, down near Waterton National Park.
And where you grew up, is that where this book is set?
Yeah, it's a funny book to talk about because it is, on the one hand, it's fictional in the sense that all the characters are made up and sort of the personal plot lines are fictions, but I did grow up on a farm downwind from an unruly sour gas plant, and we had all the problems that are depicted in the book, so it's kind of a mix.
So was your experience growing up, was that the impetus to write a book like this?
Yeah, in a sort of a very long fused way. I've written a lot of books before kind of getting around to this one. I always think there's got to be a lot of thought and a lot of distance before you take on a personal material like this. I really had to kind of think about what I wanted to write about, you know. But I'll tell you what the impetus really was particularly with the fracking industry mm-hmm. in Alberta today, I started to hear a lot of things that sounded very, very similar to what we were told and how we were treated when I was young, and it kind of made me a bit angry all over again that for all the talk of having better relations between industry and affected people, that really, you know, it just isn't very different at all.
So what is it that you were saying? Is it the sort of pandering that business seems to have towards the community and say the First Nations community and the community at large, say?
Well, one, you know, all that's changed really is the style. Is that back in the late 50s and the 60s, you know, the industry was new to a lot of the areas that it was operating in. They were completely farm communities, and and the industry was used to just kind of having its way, that people were, you know, expected to kind of get out of the way, get out of industry's ways for the good of the economy and so on, and there wasn't much of a fuss made about it. You know, you had to cry loud and long to get anyone's attention in those days, or have something really horrible happen, like a death of a child or something. So I think the thing is now, I mean, the companies have entire departments that are devoted to community relations, and so, you know, the talk is all very groomed and careful, but what is really happening nonetheless is still much the same, you know. There's an accident, there's flaring, there's some problem, and, you know, you call them, you complain, and they tell you that, call them again if it gets worse, you know, go to town or something if it, try and get out of it if it's really bad. You know, it's just the same stuff, really.
So the book, I guess, begins in the 60s, when the writers have this gas plant just south of them.
Yeah.
And I guess Tom and Ella and their three children, have they lived there a long time before this? Or?
Yeah, Ella, it's Ella's parents' place. So it's actually where she was born. And so it's the only place she's ever lived, you know, because her... when she married her husband, he came to live there and took over with her the family farm, and so it's this is kind of the reason they don't immediately pack up and leave, you know, is because she's extremely connected to that spot, and so they want to kind of exhaust all the alternatives first, and also they don't know how long the problem's going to last. They don't know how serious it is, really, in the early period, you know.
So both of them react to what's happening differently, don't they?
Yeah, they do. I mean, you know, Tom hasn't got the same ties to the place, so he would probably be inclined to try and, you know, being somewhat shrewd and thinking of himself as a bit of a horse trader, he probably would... like to get out, sell it to somebody before the word gets out that there's a serious problem, you know, that would devalue the place, because that's what happens, is your land values go to pieces, you know, once people realize that, you know, it's going to be hard to raise animals there and so on. And whereas Ella, you know, it's more just a deep emotional tie that she has, but then, you know, when it comes down to, there's a point at which, first of all, baby pigs die. Well, they have incredibly small lungs when they're born, so it's not uncommon for them to be the kind of the canary in the coal mine, but then they have a couple of calves die, and they start to realize that this could really knock out a kid, you know, or knock out a human.
Mm-hmm.
Just as easily, so then they have to get serious about going, and then they try to leave, and they can't get a deal that makes any sense out of the oil company. So they again, they're kind of thwarted, and they stay on. Now, meanwhile, you know, this gas plant, you know, they're not just simply they're trying. You know, the people that run the plant are trying to figure out why this plant is polluting so badly, why it's running so badly, and so they're trying various things and eventually have some success. So the, you know, the plant gets a little less impossible to live with about the time that they're trying to leave and finding it difficult to leave, so they wind up staying.
And then the book, as I said, alternates between what happens then and sort of what happens in the now, in sort of contemporary times with her son Bill, who, as we find out, ends up working in the gas industry.
Yeah, and you know, this is this may seem a little far fetched to people who don't come from that kind of a place or aren't used to living around oil and gas, but the fact of the matter is that kids off farms are in very great demand often in the oil and gas industry because they understand machines and used to working very hard and they tend to make good employees. So, and another way of kind of making peace with neighbors that are angry at you is to employ their kids. And so in both ways, it's sort of natural that Bill, who has a lot of aptitudes that fit very well with engineering, which he goes on to study, he's like a kid in a candy shop when he goes and works for the plant for a summer. You know, it's much more interesting to him than farming. But, you know, yes, it ushers him into a lot of kind of dark territory as well in terms of loyalty and so on when his father has been trying to get the community together on a lawsuit against the oil companies. And here's, even though Tom gives Bill the okay to go and work on the plant and even helps him get there, Bill can't get over the feeling that he's kind of betrayed his family.
In reading the reviews of the book, what intrigued me about your book is this the dynamic of the relationship between Bill and Tom, the father-son relationship. It must have been something that you've pondered when writing out these characters and writing this book. What did you learn, Fred, about say the sons and fathers in the course of writing this book? Have you come to any conclusions about the relationship that these people have?
Yeah, well, I try to use, Ella is a very shrewd person. She knows these two people very, very well. And, and she gets very frustrated with her husband and her son because of the way that they really don't talk about anything important. And, for example, whenever Tom would ask Bill, well, do you think you might consider farming? Bill will always say, oh, yeah, sure, yeah. And, Tom would be reassured and he'd feel, well, the farm's worth continuing on with. It'll go another generation or more. But Ella can look at that situation and think, there's no possible way, that in that economy, in that situation, all the attractions are going to be in the oil and gas industry for their son. And meanwhile, the farm is contaminated, is compromised. It's not, it would be a poor bet for them to have their son take it over, but Tom, not that he's dumb in any way, but he just lets his preferences accept those sort of short answers that Bill would consider it. Bill just wants to get along, and he doesn't really know either what he's going to do when he's a young guy.
Yeah. The other thing that this book does, I read somewhere that this is one of the first books that takes up this setting. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think it is. It's funny. I've known a lot of people that wanted to write novels rooted in the oil and gas industry, and I began to think, as it took me longer and longer to get mine together, that it kind of felt like there's some sort of curse on doing so. But it's interesting. It's a difficult story to kind of get your head around in a way because it changes very rapidly. It's also, it's in some sense a kind of a technological story, and how do you tell that kind of story without boring people, you have to be very careful, not to bog down in the technology and and wind up talking about precisely why, you know, sour gas is sour and why it's dangerous and how it's processed and all these sorts of things, you know. So I had to kind of learn to dance around that and keep the human story high, even, but people still had to understand things, you know, and to run that gamut. So it's maybe that's kept people out of a story that is so much in the news, you know, the conflict between oil and gas and the people around it.
And less people think, you know, you haven't written a book that's a screed, say, one way or the other on resource development or oil extraction, right?
Yeah. You know, one of the things that's really pleased me is, you know, things are so polarized in Alberta, where I mm-hmm. come from, that, you know, conversations about oil and gas tend to be all one way or all the other. You know, you either play for team oil or you play for team environment or whatever. And, you know, there is no, you know, the communication is just sort of polite, and not much more than that. Or, you know, or in some cases, just furious. So the fact is, quite a few guys I know who work for the oil and gas industry who don't, you know, particularly know me well, so it's not just a favor to me to read the book, but are reading the book and liking it. You know, I hear back from quite a few people in the industry, and it's amazing to me that they want to read it, and they seem to want to read it, because there's been nothing about what they do, you know, mm-hmm. in a novel, and they're actually, their response, too, is they think the treatment is fair, you know, that I do really consider what people are doing on both sides of that fence.
And it is a timely book, isn't it? Even in, you know, certainly in your province, but across Canada, in this province as well, in British Columbia, we're thinking about these things.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, it really, it is. I mean, there's probably no more hot-button time than now, as, you know, with so many people wanting, say in BC here, wanting to have those pipelines and the liquid LNG industry up and running, you know, to boost the economy, and so many people on the other side wanting very badly for that not to happen, for there not to be, you know, LNG ships on the sea and so on. It's you know, it's a time of conflict, and it's I don't know. I hope I've written a book that shows, you know, that there's human beings on, you know, smart people on both sides of that coin, and you know, and people who get trapped in the middle and with their loyalties torn.
What this book, I think, also does is it shows a side of Alberta that we're perhaps not used to, and I don't, I mean that in the sense that. People assume a lot of things about Alberta and Albertans. There's sort of some sort of stereotype about you people.
Yeah.
I mean, does that frustrate you? I mean, and did you consciously or unconsciously try to write something that makes the Albertan or Alberta a little more nuanced for the rest of us?
Yeah. Well, it's an interesting thing. I mean, it's probably something that's made me want to have my entire career in Alberta, just because that stereotype's not new.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite old, and to, you know, to grow up and travel around the country and discover that people have a kind of a pretty monolithic view of what goes on there. And I mean, we, you know, Alberta feeds it by being a kind of a one industry province, and also by voting, you know, the same government, same party back into government over and over again. But, you know, what people, I think, don't understand about Alberta is that, you know, is that every time we have an election, I mean, we get very poor turnouts in our elections. And so the government, you know, a majority government has been elected a few times. Ed Stelmax, I think he had about 20% of the voting population voting for him and had a huge majority. So it's a very kind of peculiar situation. There's a lot of people that who don't vote for the ruling party, and yet some it just doesn't show in the books, in the people sitting in Parliament. So there's a lot more vigorous debate, and a lot of, you know, you see it more actually in social media than anywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
Very interesting thing that just happened in Alberta is that gay-straight alliances, which had been brought forward as a motion by the Liberal Party in the legislature, was then taken on, it was voted down and then amended in such a way that was very unsatisfactory to the people that wanted to see these alliances in our schools. And just yesterday, the new premier caved and basically gave, you know, is producing now the same legislation that his party voted down and changed, you know, before. Now they're bringing it back as it was originally meant, and it's a great, you know, success. Well, the reason that happened is because there was a tremendous backlash against the government putting hurdles and blockades in the way of gay-straight alliances. And, I mean, that's in Alberta people, I don't think, understand very well.
Would you talk about sort of the literary culture in Alberta? I mean, that's something that you're probably well aware of, or you're certainly a part of it. I mean, tell us about some of the writers that you enjoy reading from your province.
Yeah, well, you know, Alberta's got a great literary history, and I also was a founding member of the Writers Guild of Alberta back in 1980, and
mm-hmm.
I mean, at that time, I mean, I remember that founding meeting, and you had people like Rudy Weep and Robert Croach, whose work I loved, and Myrna Summers and Gloria Sawai. Gloria Sawai won a Governor General's Award with her only full-length book of fiction. You know, there's been a tremendous writing life. Greg Hollingshead, Robert Hillis, are people that really contributed to that community for a long, long time. A lot of interesting people, you know, grew up there and became writers there and then moved away, like Mark Anthony Jarman being an example. So, I mean, it's been a great writing culture. It changes a lot because whereas all kinds of people are moving to Alberta all the time to take part in the economy, it's not necessarily a writer's economy, and so a certain number of people move on, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a bit of a turnstile at times for the writing community, but there, I don't know, there's always a good threshold of writers around.
And you're seeing emerging talent, are you?
Yeah, there's a tremendous number. I know, you know, again, going back to the Writers Guild of Alberta, I go to the odd event they have or partake in them, and you know, I'm kind of amazed to see, you know, that there really is all the chairs that have been vacated, you know, by people, you know, dying or moving on or whatever. You know, there's a whole new crop of people, pretty talented bunch. They seem to be, there's a lot of good young nonfiction writers now, I've
mm-hmm.
noticed, and there's a lot of poetry action. It's a different type of community, but it seems very healthy.
Yeah, it's an important one nonetheless, isn't it?
Yeah.
Fred, it's been such great fun talking to you today. Thanks for this. Continued good luck with this book.
Well, thank you very much, Joe, for having me on.
You're very welcome. The website for more, fredstenson.ca. The book is called Who by Fire, and it's published by Doubleday. Do pick it up. It's by Fred Stenson, and he joined me on the line from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plante.